welcome to the sixth episode of Ask the Water Polo Goalie. I'm your host, Glenn Bush, and this podcast is me answering the most common questions I get about being or training to be a water polo goalie. What I want it to be is me answering your questions. You know, you could be a coach needing help. You could be a current goalie with a specific question about a specific play or a specific training method. You could even be a field player wanting a goalie's perspective. So if you have a question, you can email it to me. My email is thewaterpolegoalie@gmail.com, or you can leave me an audio message, and there's a link down in the description where if you do leave me an audio message, I will use it in an upcoming episode. This week's question is, when should you specialize and just focus on playing and training for water polo? Not just about being a goalie, but just one specific sport. So let's start with a story. This story comes from David Epstein in his book, Range. There was a boy, and the boy's father could tell something was different. At 6 months old, the boy could bounce on his father's palm as he walked through their home. At 7 months, his father gave him a putter to fool around with, and the boy dragged it everywhere he went in his little circular baby walker. At 10 months, he climbed down from his high chair, trundled over to a golf club that had been cut down to size for him, and imitated the swing he'd been watching in the garage. Because the father couldn't yet talk with his son, he drew pictures to show the boy how to place his hands on the club. It is very difficult to communicate how to putt when the child is too young to talk, he would later note. At 2, an age when the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention list physical developmental milestones like kicks a ball and stands on tiptoe, he went on national television and used a club tall enough to reach his shoulder to drive a ball past an admiring Bob Hope. That same year, he entered his first tournament and won the 10 and under division. There was no time to waste. By 3, the boy was learning how to play out of a sand trap, and his father was mapping out his destiny. And sand trap is how he would say sand trap. He knew his son had been chosen for this, and that it was his duty to guide him. Think about it. If you felt that certain about the path ahead, maybe you too would start prepping your 3-year-old how to handle the inevitable and insatiable media that would come. He quizzed the boy, playing reporter, teaching him how to give curt answers, never to offer more than precisely what was asked. That year, the boy shot 48, 11 over par for 9 holes at a course in California. When the boy was 4, his father could drop him off at a golf course at 9 in the morning and pick him up 8 hours later, sometimes with the money he won from those foolish enough to doubt him. At 8, the son beat his father for the first time. The father didn't mind, because he was convinced that his boy was singularly talented and that he was uniquely equipped to help him. He had been an outstanding athlete himself, and against enormous odds. He played baseball in college when he was the only black player in his entire conference. He understood people and discipline. A sociology major, he served in Vietnam as a member of the Army's elite Green Berets, and later taught psychological warfare to future officers. He knew he hadn't done his best with his 3 kids from a previous marriage, but now he could see that he'd been given a second chance to do the right thing with number 4. And it was all going according to plan. The boy was already famous by the time he reached Stanford, and soon his father opened up about his importance. His son would have a larger impact than Nelson Mandela, than Gandhi, than Buddha, he insisted. He has a larger form than any of them, he said. He's the bridge between the East and the West. There is no limit because he has the guidance. I don't know yet exactly what form this will take, but he is the chosen one. And I think it's pretty easy to figure out who the chosen one was in this story. It's Tiger Woods. And it's his story and other ones like the Polgar sisters that get pushed for specializing early. You know, focus on deliberate practice as early as possible and get to that 10,000 hours before everyone else because you'll be the best by then. And if you don't know, the Polgar sisters are essentially a family wrapped up into a science experiment. Kind of the brief thing is 2 Hungarian teachers got married and they raised their 3 daughters to be chess grandmasters. They wanted to create geniuses, so they started with chess. To their credit, all 3 daughters became champion chess players and kind of national stars in Hungary, and the youngest daughter became the best. But you know, their lesson and the lesson from Tiger Woods was to focus early, practice hard from an early age to gain that advantage and master your skill or sport before anyone else can. Now, this is how you become legendary. On the surface, that makes sense, right? Well, let's hear another story. But before I do that story, a quick message from our sponsor. Again, this story comes from David Epstein in his book, Range. I'll put a link down in the description if you want to get that book. It's a really good one. And this story is about another boy. His mom was a coach, but she never coached him. He would kick a ball around with her when he learned to walk. As a boy, he played squash with his father on Sundays. He dabbled in skiing, wrestling, swimming, skateboarding. He played basketball, handball, tennis, table tennis, and even a game of badminton over his neighbor's fence. And he played soccer at school. He would later give credit to the wide range of sports he played for helping him develop his athleticism and hand-eye coordination. He found that sport really didn't matter much so long as it included a ball. I was always very much more interested if a ball was involved, he would remember. He was a kid who loved to play. His parents had no particular athletic aspirations for him. We had no plan A, we had no plan B, his mother would later say. She and the boy's father encouraged him to sample a wide array of sports. In fact, it was essential. The boy became unbearable, his mother said, if he had to stay still for too long. Though his mother taught tennis, she decided against working with him. He would have just upset me anyway, she said. He tried out every strange stroke and certainly never returned a ball normally. That is simply no fun for a mother. Rather than pushy, a Sports Illustrated writer would observe that his parents were, if anything, poly. Nearing his teens, the boy began to gravitate more towards tennis. And if they nudged him at all, it was to stop taking tennis so seriously. When he played matches, his mother often wandered away to chat with friends. His father had only one rule, just don't cheat. And he didn't. And he started getting really good. As a teenager, he was good enough to warrant an interview with the local newspaper. His mother was appalled to read that when asked what he would buy with a hypothetical first paycheck from playing tennis, her son answered, a Mercedes. Now, she was relieved when the reporter let her listen to a recording of the interview and they realized there had been a mistake. The boy had said Mercedes in Swiss German. He simply wanted more CDs. The boy was competitive, no doubt, but when his tennis instructors decided to move him up to a group with older players, he asked to move back so he could stay with his friends. After all, part of the fun was hanging around after his lessons to gab about music or pro wrestling or soccer. By the time he finally gave up on other sports, soccer most notably, just to focus on tennis, other kids had long since been working with strength coaches, sports psychologists, and nutritionists, but it didn't seem to hamper his development in the long run. In his mid-30s, an age by which even legendary tennis players are typically retired, he would still be ranked number one in the world. And if you haven't figured it out, this is Roger Federer. And you might be thinking to yourself that Roger's story is the exception. He's just a naturally gifted athlete, and that he would have excelled at any sport. But for the rest of us to reach greatness, we must focus early and practice hard right away. And that's the point of the book. That's where you'll be wrong. Deliberate practice is a big factor for success, without a doubt. But that comes after sampling a broad range of sports, trying new things, seeing what you like, seeing what you excel at, what sport or activity you would love to spend hours upon hours of focused, deliberate practice on. What David Epstein found time and time again is that the general athlete, the ones that sample a lot of sports, tried new things, played multiple positions in a specific sport, were the ones that ultimately succeeded. LeBron James was a big-time football player as well as a basketball player. He was offered Division I scholarships to play as a wide receiver. And I guarantee he played a bunch of different sports as a kid. Kobe Bryant was also an excellent soccer player. While he was playing basketball over in Europe as a teenager and young man, he was perfecting his soccer skills. Tom Brady, he played basketball and baseball in high school along with football. And then, look at Bo Jackson. Look at that guy. And Deion Sanders, they were able to play two sports as pros, and they were just good at a ton of sports growing up. We'll leave the role of genetics out of this discussion. But yeah, no matter how many hours you put into basketball, it makes it a lot easier to succeed if you're tall. And each sport has certain traits that give some players a leg up on the competition. But back to the topic at hand, people like Tiger Woods are the big exception. I don't know Tiger personally, but he seems to really enjoy golf. And it's rare that the sport your parent chose for you is really the sport you like. Or maybe you would like it if you weren't being driven to extremes by your parents. There's the HBO documentary called Trophy Kids, and it's about parents trying to be like Earl Woods and create their own Tiger Woods, but they end up ruining their kid's childhood and ruining their relationship with their kid. And then at the end, Todd Marinovich comes on for the roundtable discussion. And if you're too young to know who Todd Marinovich is, just look up his story and how his dad pushed him to be a left-handed quarterback, even though Todd is right-handed, and what that did to Todd as a young adult and with his relationship with his dad. But back to the point of David's book Range and all the research he did is that the most common story of success is Roger Federer. A kid plays a bunch of different sports. They get to work on their overall athleticism and hand-eye coordination skills. Playing a range of sports allows you to take lessons from different sports and apply them to others. It's the Lollapalooza effect of learning. When I was coaching girls water polo at Torrey Pines, we would get girls that played field hockey or lacrosse or soccer, and now they were going to try water polo. We would also get girls that only swam, and now they wanted to play water polo because it seemed like a natural transition. So guess which girls picked up the sport the quickest? You know, they picked up the offensive structure, they know that they picked up when was the right time to drive, and they knew how to drive to create space to set up a teammate. Yeah, it was the girls that played a range of other team sports. The swimmers were good athletes, but they usually relied on their speed to get open for a one-on-one type of situation. And this would work at the lower levels, but that advantage quickly disappeared the higher they got in sport. That is if they didn't learn the team aspect. The things you learn from other team sports will help you in the long run, both physically and mentally. But maybe you love water polo and you've known this at a young age. Now that's great. Play a bunch of water polo, but play other sports too. Maybe you'll find something you love even more. Maybe you learn that you're way better at another sport. At the minimum, you get to meet more people, make more friends, and you learn how to be a teammate to a wide group of people in a wide range of situations. Being a good teammate takes practice too. The other reason why I should play a wide range of sports is to prevent repetitive motion injuries. It is becoming way too common now for young athletes to get repetitive motion injuries because they focused too early and they're overtraining on one specific sport and motion just way too much. Playing a bunch of sports balances out your body as you're growing. Again, it's about improving your overall athleticism. A personal story is I loved baseball as a kid. I wanted to be a professional pitcher. I started pitching right after T-ball. I even had a mound built in my backyard as I got older, and I threw a ton of pitches. I was really focused on deliberate practice. I worked on curves, sliders, cutters, body position, pushing off that mound, anything and everything to get you to be a better pitcher. And this wasn't for my parents. I did it all on my own. It's just kind of like the Roger Federer effect. When I found my sport, I got focused. And at that age, I was good too. You know, who knows if that would have lasted. You know, it's preteen, early teen, a bunch of crazy things are going on. But I think you can guess what happened. I had several tears in my elbow ligaments at different times. And after kind of the last times, the doctor said I should probably stop pitching. And if I wasn't going to pitch, I didn't want to play baseball. And I stopped playing baseball. But I still played every sport under the sun as a kid while I was focused on baseball, either in official leagues or just fooling around. I could easily find another sport that I liked and could refocus my energy there. It took a few years, but that became water polo. And I didn't start playing water polo until my sophomore year in high school. And some of you might think that is way too late to start and get good at a sport and be able to move on to the college level. But once I found my sport, after sampling all the others out there, my deliberate practice and my training became solely focused on water polo. It was the reason I lifted in the morning. It was the reason I would do those morning swim workouts. It was the reason I would stay in the pool after swim practice in the off season to do a leg set so I can stay in shape for water polo and for the goalie position. I wasn't really starting from scratch. I had all these other experiences in other sports to draw upon. But eventually there is a time you'll need to start focusing on your specific sport and get into the grind of deliberate practice. By high school, I think you should have your 2 to 3 favorite sports figured out. Maybe you can play 4 sports in high school, but scheduling gets real tough with the semester system, and it really only kind of sets up well for 3. And you still have to maintain your grades. And out of the 2 to 3 sports that you're going to focus on in high school, you know, there's that one sport that will take up the bulk of your off-season / free time to work out, to train for, to just even think about. And that's probably going to be the sport that you want to focus on to get into college with. And even if you can only play one sport in high school, you should still find another sport to play with a club team or in a rec league. Again, you want to continue to work on your overall athleticism and you still want to sample other sports and you get to go have fun. You get to go hang out with friends. You get to go do something else. If you make it to college, you are by nature focused to play one sport. some sports like football and track, and you got water polo and swimming, allow for some crossover, and maybe you can be the lucky few that can play two sports in college and still handle all your schoolwork. I've known a couple of those people. It's amazing what they do. It's just really hard. So you got to know your limits if you're going to try and do that. In middle school, you may have your favorite sport, but don't stop playing a bunch of other sports. This is when I was focused on baseball, but I still played volleyball, basketball. I played some tennis. I even tried Pop Warner football, but I stopped that after breaking my arm before even playing a game. You know, keep trying new sports. I didn't like football. One, I thought it would be a tight end or a QB, this big offensive star, but they had me playing left tackle, which I didn't know its importance back then. And then two, I busted my arm and it gave me a convenient excuse to say I'm done. And the younger you go, the more sports you should be playing and sampling. It's like a pyramid. Start off with a wide base, trying out a bunch of different sports, both for fun and in official rec leagues. Then as you get older, you'll narrow down what you like and what you're good at until you reach the top of that pyramid kind of late in high school and you know which sport you want to focus solely on. Don't focus too early. You open yourself up to repetitive motion injuries at an age you shouldn't be getting them. And you cut yourself off from new experiences, new friends, new things to learn. And you can potentially reduce your overall athleticism. You know, the more things you open yourself up to, the more luck you introduce into your life. When you narrow your life, your surface area for serendipity, for luck, narrows too. The more open your life is, the more surface area you have, the more receptive you are to luck coming into your life. Remember, if you have a question, please send them to me at thewaterpologoalie@gmail.com or leave me an audio message through the link in the description. I'll have my email down there as well. If you want to support the show and need gear, there's a Cap7 link in the description. If you click that link and buy anything through Cap7, I'll get a small commission. If you want to support the show directly with a small donation, there's a link for that in the description too. And finally, if you're finding value in this podcast, please leave me a rating and review in your favorite podcast player because it helps others discover this podcast too. So thank you, and until next time.